All right, fellas, if we can have your attention, we're going to get started. I mistakenly left my name tag at home, but after 2 days, I'd learned who I was, and so I thought I could do without it today anyhow. I'm Dave Sproul, and by calling, I'm an evangelist. For many years, I was in evangelism, but in 1979, Dr. Singleton called me into his office and said, "Brother Sproul," he said, "I believe the Lord wants us to start a mission board, and I believe the Lord wants you to be the general director." And I said, whoa, hold off just a minute. I said, "I've been to a number of mission fields and preached there, but I don't know anything about running a mission board." He said, "Well, I don't know a lot either, but we'll learn as we go along." And so after 30 years of being the general director, I stepped down in 2010. On my birthday, I had completed 30 years, and it was time that I stepped down and turned over the reins to Pastor Ball. But I think I understand a bit of both. I sat there this morning. It was a hard time keeping quiet while Pastor Ball was speaking because I have got all kind of questions and all kind of answers. Let me tell you that one of the biggest problems about deputation is the fact that the cost of sending missionaries to the field has so greatly exploded over the years. 1954, $200 was sufficient for the average missionary, that is personal and work funds, on the average field in the world.
Amen. That's true.
Now, if a church took a missionary on for $25, those of us that have had a little division could tell you that it would only take 8 churches to support. Right? Today, the missionary may very well go for 3 to 4 years, getting $3,000 to $4,000 of expense. Do not be surprised if missionaries come to your church pastors and tell you their mission agency has approved them for $5,000, $6,000 a month. You say, "That's overwhelming." Well, go to Tokyo and live there, will you? Find out. The problem is we are not walking in each other's shoes enough. We really aren't. Paul said that we are to bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. And what Pastor Ball has been driving at is we need to somehow get in each other's shoes. The best way you can do it, if you're a pastor, is to go with Pastor Ball or me sometime to India. When you come back, you will be a changed man. You will have understanding, not only India, but most any country of the world. One of the greatest ways to educate yourself is to go to some foreign fields. See it firsthand. Pray about it. Guaranteed, when you come back, you'll be changed. If you go 22 times to India, like I have, you will be more than changed. But it's a matter of each one. A pastor has his responsibility. The missionary has his responsibility. Now, because I was in evangelism, met many pastors, oftentimes talked about missions, and then missions director for 30 years, I think I can see a bit of both sides. Now I'm senior consultant. That means I write my own job description and don't do much. But let's be honest. I'm not going to take the time to read it because all of you are so familiar with it, but we could read this morning, if you liked, 15 verses in 2 Corinthians 11. And I suggest to you, when you read that, you will realize Paul had some problems. So what I want to talk with you about today is problems missionaries seldom talk about. Why? I'm sure there are a number of reasons, but one of those is the fact that they don't think that you would understand. Not fully. Or maybe you're not interested. Or you would think that they were weak. That they were, what we call a wuss. So forth. But until you've been on a foreign field for a while and seen some of the things that go on, it's hard to understand. How many have been to Cairo, Egypt? Raise your hand. I see one. Now, he and I have a picture you don't have. Now, you can see all kind of film strips, you can see all kind of movies and read National Geographic and all of that, but until you've been there and smelled it and see the things and get a feel for it, you really, really don't understand it. Now, I could do that with a number of countries in the world, and if you have been there, you and I would be on the same wavelength. If you haven't been there, it's impossible for you to be on the same wavelength. It really, really is. So, this morning, all I'm going to try to do is to go through several of these things. And I appreciate Pastor Ball sitting down, giving me my time. And lunch is not going to be served until about 1 o'clock, I believe. There is a session after this one. We'll forget that. No, we'll get you out of here. What are some problems that Paul ran into that missionaries still have today? And I have enumerated 10 of them. I preached this for a friend in Colorado some years ago, and he got up after I got through preaching, and he said, "You folks are wondering why I haven't preached on this." He said, "Let me tell you why." He said, "I didn't know 1/10 of the stuff that Dr. Sproul gave us tonight." Now, if pastors are willing to admit they don't understand, then missionaries ought to be willing to admit they don't understand what it is to be a pastor. Really? All right. First one, quitters. Now, when Paul and his company Luce and Paphos, they came to Perga and Pamphylia, and John, departing from them, returned to Jerusalem, Acts 13:13. It's true that John Mark later became a great servant of the Lord. At this time, I think he's an immature young man that didn't get to stay in the Holiday Inn, and he decided to go home. I don't know what it is. You can theorize all day long, and you may never come up with the right answer. But the truth of the matter is, he left them at a very significant time. Paul is no dummy. Barnabas is no dummy. And we're going to get to a missionary dissension in a moment. But it was significant enough that Paul put his foot down and drew the line and said, "He is not going with us on this next missionary journey." Two of God's choicest men got in a pretty strong debate. And those of you fellows that know the Greek language, you'll find it stronger than it is in the English language. He quit. But where does quitting begin? I am told that 1 out of 100 young people that either at a summer camp, in a revival meeting, when the pastor gives the invitation, or wherever, that respond to an invitation that says, "I believe God has called me to the foreign mission field, and I'm coming forward to let it be known that God's called me to the foreign mission field." Only 1 out of 100 ever end up on the foreign mission field. Now, let's be fair. Some of them maybe didn't understand it. Maybe with some it was just a wave of emotion and it wasn't really the calling of God. I don't know. I simply know that is an unbelievable figure. 1 out of 100. Now, let me go a step farther. Of those who go to the foreign mission field, only 1 out of 2 ever go back for the second term. And that, to me, is even more disastrous. Now, let me tell you something. We don't have too many missionaries today. The cost has gone so high that they've got to have too many churches, in a sense, to support them. Gone are the days when we could support a missionary for $25 or $50. Now, please, if you've got a smaller church, if you want to give $10 a month, God bless you. God knows that. You understand that. But if you have a missionary that needs $5,000 a month, how many churches will he have to have if he's getting $50 a month? And how many churches is he going to have to call? And out of that number that he calls, sometimes a missionary may call 25, 30, or 35 churches, even good Bible-believing churches, before he gets one church that will take him. And of those that do have him for a hearing, that give him a chance to preach and present his field, it is going to be a small percentage that are going to take him on for support. A missionary may very well contact hundreds of churches before he ever gets his support. Now, pastors, even though you get overwhelmed by the number that are calling you, you do have a set salary. You do have a set place of ministry. Your responsibilities, activities are quite different from that of the missionary. But I assure you, it gets very, very frustrating. If For the 30 years that I was a missions director, I lined up our nationals that we have under our board. And it is a very frustrating experience, especially when I'm calling some of my dearest, best friends, and I call them 4 or 5 times over 6 weeks, and I can't get them to give me 30 seconds on the telephone. Do you hear me? It really is. It's difficult. It's very frustrating. On the other hand, I know that there are some churches that are being overwhelmed with missionaries. I think that may be larger churches. I don't think the average church of 150 to 200 is being overwhelmed with missionaries. Now, if you can't have them, there are ways to handle it. Number one, be understanding. You can spend 5 or 10 minutes on the phone with the missionary and say, where are you going to, so on, what's your background, so on and so forth, see if there's any connection there, and say, you know, brother, God bless you. I appreciate the fact that you're going to the mission field and you're willing to give your life on that mission field. I want to pray for you. And I have done this many times because for years I have handled the calls that come into Tri-City Baptist Church for missionaries wanting to come to this church. Even though we've got a mission board here, and many of them don't know that we've got a mission board out of our church. I never let a missionary get off the line that is calling for an appointment without praying with him. I show him some concern. And I say to that same missionary, if you are ever in our area, even though we cannot have you to come in and present your ministry and try to gain support, if you'll come by or let me know in advance, I will personally take you to lunch and pray with you about your work. Now, you can do something like that as a pastor in a kind, genteel way that will relieve the pain of being turned down again. You understand that? I think that can be done. There are other things you might do. But let's get back to this matter of quitting. What does it do? Well, it can cause a lot of problems. Let's suppose that here is a couple that they are out on deputation for 3 years, and I have no idea how much they're going to take in love offerings. It may be $25,000 or $30,000. It may be less than that. They take in that amount. A good bit of the Lord's money has gone out toward them, and they go to the mission field for 2 years, and they leave. Now, hear me. There are legitimate reasons for leaving the mission field. It may be health. It may be a major family problem. There may be a critical problem at home that they feel obligated to come home about, at least for a period of time. There are legitimate reasons for a missionary to leave the field. I don't call every missionary who leaves the field in the middle of a term a quitter. Not so. Not so. But there are some legitimate reasons. However, in the case of John Mark, it doesn't seem like it was a legitimate reason. And I will tell you that a lot of the Lord's money has been wasted, at least to a point, because of people that simply have left. Oftentimes they're leaving churches that are not ready to go on their own. Here is a church that they've got started, depending upon the country. But it's possible in 2 or 3 years that they have got a number of believers. They're not mature. They don't have a leader. And so up and away they go, the missionaries, and they come back home, and they've left those babes in Christ. There's a real danger of this, by the way, on furlough. We had a missionary a few years ago in a very difficult country leave to come back for 3 months. And he put in a man that had been working with him into the leadership for 3 months' time. And when he goes back, he has split the work. I called his home church pastor and tried to talk with him about it. He didn't want to talk with me about it. No, no, no. He said, that's not true. That's not true. That's not true. And I said, Pastor, I'm sorry, but it is true. He stole half of his crop, if you can put it that way. And that's difficult. But I'm saying that we that are missionaries or involved in missions need to say to our men and women, look, when you go to the mission field, this is a commitment. It isn't I'm going to try it kind of thing. I need to know that I'm here by the grace of God, that God has called me. And when I teach here in the Bible college and seminary and teach mission courses, I say the thing that's going to keep you going when the days get dark on the field is that you know God called you to that field. And if you know God called you, you can stay there during the darkest hour. I need to move on. dissension among missionaries. They are human and have Adamic natures. They often are laboring under tremendous pressures. They have cultural pressures. They have financial pressures. The education of children. Supporting churches are expecting glowing reports with souls saved and new churches started. Missionaries are under a great deal of pressure. They know that. We have the idea that whenever missionaries leave our shore, they put on a halo and it never gets removed until they come back. You understand what I'm saying? They never sin. I mean, they've all had the old nature eradicated. You and I'd better not go. But they've all had the old... We do. And in one sense, it's good. We ought to have a high respect for veterans of the cross who are willing to go in places where you and I don't ever want to go. Aren't you thankful that God has not called you to certain countries of the world down deep inside your heart? Huh? Yeah, sure you are. I'm thankful that God never called me to rescue mission work. That'd kill me. Oh, I know where God calls you, God's grace will follow and provide. But, you know, all the professions and so little percentage-wise that is real and genuine. There are works that you are so thankful that God never called you to. But there's dissension among missionaries. We had a man and a son that were with our mission board. And I was there one time, and a big family feud started in the afternoon. Pastor Benny Moran was here. He's gone back, but he was with me at the time. And father and son got into fisticuffs in the living room, and we had to separate them. There are times when there is real dissension among missionaries, and you have it here with Paul and Barnabas. I do not want to take anything away from Barnabas because obviously God had a purpose for him. I will simply say to you that after Acts chapter 15, Barnabas is never mentioned again. Paul writes most of the epistles of the New Testament after that. I will tell you something else. We've been talking about filling with the Spirit and the sanctified life and that kind of thing. I will guarantee you that either one or the other or both were not filled with the Spirit on this occasion. They really weren't. They went at it tooth and toenail. Well, thanks be to God, they went two different directions and God blessed it. And later John Mark, one of the greatest verses in the Bible, when Paul calls John Mark to him there, when he's in the Mamertine prison in Rome, he wants to see him. And we all know that he wrote the book of Mark, and a lot of good things came out of the life of John Mark. But at that time, he was an immature young fella that, for whatever reason, just decided to leave them. And Paul said, I don't trust him. Hey, that was pretty heavy stuff they were doing, wasn't it? That was pretty heavy stuff that they were doing, going out on that missionary trip. And they were out on that second missionary trip, or going on that second missionary trip. And so he didn't trust him, and so he left him. So there can be dissension among missionaries. And no missionary wants to come back and tell his supporting churches, well, we had a lot of dissension, a lot of problems on our field. No pastor wants to hear that. You know why? Because he's got more than he can handle already. He didn't want to hear it. Tell me about the souls getting saved. We all want to hear positive things from people we support. And rightly so. But everything isn't positive all the time, fellas. And young lady, I'm sorry. I keep forgetting there is a lady in the room. Number three, loneliness. Paul says, writing from that Mamertine prison, only Luke is with me. There's a lot of pathos in that verse. The great veteran of the cross that we so highly recognize and honor and praise his work and name, he is about to be beheaded. And Luke is serving as the prison chaplain. There's loneliness there. Now, missionaries sometimes get lonely because of distance, because of language, because of dress, because of food, lonely because of what's happening back home. Maybe they just like to have hamburger and french fries one more time. sickness, death, marriages, grandchildren born, graduations, all of those things can bring loneliness. 1978, I left for a 3-month trip around the world. Literally, I went around the world in 80 days. And I'd already been to India in 75, and I knew better, but I put India in for 3 weeks at the end of that trip. Dumb, dumb, dumb. And I was in a government housing, well, it's about 25 levels below a Motel 6 at the best, in India, and I'm preaching twice a day for former pastor V.K. Cherian, way back in the boondocks in a village called Shakanagar. No one there speaks English except the Cherian family. There's no newspaper to read. There's no television to watch. There's no radio to listen to. I have my Bible. Yes, I can read and I can pray, but how many hours a day am I going to do that? I'm preaching twice a day. And I'm getting anxious to get home. And I had a pity party. Have you ever had a pity party where you felt like going out and digging up worms and eating them? And I'm laying there in my bed and I'm thinking, oh my, I got 2 more weeks, I got 2 more weeks. And then I got under conviction and I said to myself, Sproul, missionaries have gone out to difficult countries and when they leave, they expect to stay there for 4 years unless some terrible emergency comes up. And sometimes they're isolated. Sometimes there aren't missionaries within 400 miles of them. They're all alone. They don't know quite what to do or where to go at times. They don't have anybody to counsel with except the Lord. And here you are, you know, in 2 weeks' time, you've got an airline ticket, you're going back home, and you'll enjoy the lovely warm weather of Arizona. It does make a difference, fellas. Loneliness is one of the biggest things on the mission field. And no missionary wants to come home and say, you know, we were so lonely in the middle of that last term that we just wanted to pack up and leave it all. My wife and I would sometimes cry ourselves to sleep at night because mom and dad at home were very sick and we didn't have the money to go home. I was with a missionary in Korea in 1978 and he didn't have enough money to go back to South Dakota where his dad was dying. Walk in their moccasins, that's all I say. Walk in their shoes, and you will have a completely different attitude toward missions. And then standing alone. Paul says in my first answer, no man stood with me, but all men forsook me. I pray God that it may not be laid to their charge. 2 Timothy 4:16. We had a missionary who was our first American missionary to the Philippines years ago. He was on the island of Samar, and here's part of his letter that he wrote. There is such a need for many missionaries. The island of Samar is one of those places in the world that is still unevangelized. I am the only missionary here, and it was an island of 2 million people. I was there. And in the Philippines, much like in Jamaica and other places, they don't put windows in. And their living room, which was big, simply had bars up. Every morning, without fail, 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning, at least 150 people of their village would come and stand there and stare, and they would be replaced during the daytime with others. They live with 150 people looking into their house all the time, but they still were lonely. The only place they had any privacy was in a bedroom or bathroom. I said, how do you put up with this? They said, well, if we're going to minister to the people, we've just got to accept them as they are. And so there they were. I mean, every single day. I was there for, 10 days? And I was in their house for 10 days? And they were there all of the time. Now, I'm going to talk about something else for a moment. I'm going to get off on a tangent here, but it's a good rabbit trail. Their son, when they went, was, I think, 15, 16 years of age. There were 5 children in the family. He was learning the language, but it seemed that the boys his age in the community had just sort of shut him out. He would go down to where there was a basketball court and bounce his basketball, but nobody would play with him. Shortwave radio was his connection with the outside world, and his dad said he'll get into his room at night and he'll play that shortwave radio for hours. Eventually, that missionary had to leave the field because he got too much Agent Orange during the Vietnam War, and it's a terrible disaster what happened to him afterwards. But at that time, he was a very godly man trying to serve the Lord the best he knew how. Those two older children came back home before the parents did, and they went down the tube. I have long since, as I've analyzed it, looked back at that, and I really believe the field was too harsh for those teenagers. Are you aware that many larger mission boards today will not allow a couple to go if they have teenagers to the field? If they got younger children, let's say up to 4th, 5th, 6th grade, they will adapt. But when you put teenagers on the field, they've got major problems. Years ago, I was in Hong Kong, and there were about 35 ABWE missionaries there at the time. And I remember going to one church on Sunday morning. They must have had 150, 200 people. The Chinese young people sat over here, and the children of the missionaries sat over here, and neither the twain shall meet. Bad, bad, bad. It was because of culture. And, of course, the Americans were not learning the Chinese language. It's very difficult to learn. I tell our students in school, if you're going to the mission field, you may want to pray that God is not sending you to a field where you've got to learn Korean, Japanese, or Chinese. No, really, if that's where the Lord's called them, God bless them, go ahead. But you're going to spend a lot of time trying to learn the language just to speak it conversationally. I'm not talking about preaching it. Let's move along. Standing alone. Physical problems. Paul said, you see how large a letter I've written to you with mine own hand. Galatians 6:11. We think he may have had eyesight problems. What about Epaphroditus? He was sick nigh unto death. Now, it is true that in many countries of the world today, there is reasonable health facilities. However, there are still countries of the world where you could go and be in real problems. In India today, they have increased the number of cardiologists. I've happened to have had two major heart attacks, one in 1990 and one in 1996. But when I had my first heart attack in 1990, I learned there were only 5 cardiologists in all the country of India. I have decided I am never going to have a heart attack again in India. Oh, I've been back there numerous times since the first heart attack, but I've declared, told the Lord, I'm not going to have a heart attack here. They're not going to give me very good attention. They don't know how to handle it. We have Steve Reynolds under our board and went to Singapore and did a great work and worked 8 years to get permission to have a Bible college, and then the government essentially shut it down by requiring too much cost for those who would come in from other countries, and that was what he wanted to do, to teach people in other countries, because not very many Singaporeans are going to go to Bible college. There are a lot of good Christians in Singapore, but their standard of living is very high and their parents usually are diametrically opposed to their going into the ministry because it doesn't pay enough. It's just that simple. But so they have been back here, but let me go back to the beginning. They got approved under our board to go to Romania. And he and his wife went over there to check Romania out, and they felt a burden for it, a concern for it. That's the reason they were there. But the medical field was not sufficient. Brother Steve lost an eye when he was 16 to cancer. And there is a gene that he has that is passed on. His oldest son, James, just graduated from our academy this year, had cancer of the eye when he was two months of age. And they gave him radiation. Can you imagine 2 months of age? But they did it in Philadelphia and then at Duke University. And they saved his eyes, but they were not going to be able to go to another field. Go ahead, take 1,000 copies. Oh, did you get one, Katie? All right, good enough. Katie Carlisle, I have mentioned their family, but they're under our board. They're down in Uruguay, and Katie came here to school and graduated, and she's still here working in her print shop. Praise the Lord for that. And you're going around taking pictures so that we can put them in the bulletin. Is that right, Katie? Yes, amen. All right, go ahead. This is the best side of me. Go ahead, take a picture. But back to the Reynolds. They couldn't go to Romania, and they resigned our board. And what are we going to do? And I wasn't satisfied with that. And I prayed about it. One day, the Lord just seemed to say to me, what about Singapore? We had a couple families over there. The Reddicks were there. What about going to Singapore? Got good medical facilities there, and they were able to go there and labor there for a number of years. He also gets these little spots on his skin that they have to cut off on a regular basis and test them to make sure it's not cancer. So medical facilities are important, and there are places where you can have that, but sometimes missionaries are not able to get the proper medical attention. Six, financial problems. Paul had them. Missionaries aren't the only one. Now, you Philippians know also that in the beginning of the gospel, when I departed from Macedonia, no church communicated with me as concerning giving and receiving, but ye only. Paul had one supporting church. Paul had one supporting church. Now, fellas, Brother Ball touched upon it. We have a major major problem that independent, Bible-believing churches have not really addressed. Two of them. Number one, Christian day school teachers. Number two, missionaries. What are we going to do when it comes to retirement age? My wife and I, of course, are old enough to get retirement. I mean, Social Security is what I want to say. You don't think I'm that old, but I am. Lord willing, I'll be 75 if I get to October 23rd. The fire isn't all gone out, but it's dying down a bit. Some months are medical. Even though we've got Medicare and we've got the supplement, sometimes our Medicare and that supplement, but the copay for all of our prescriptions takes up all the Social Security. We couldn't possibly live on Social Security. And what we have done, and I'm going to say it generally speaking as pastors, we have turned it aside because it does not affect me individually. You're going to have to do something about it. Brother Ball handles that situation now with our missionaries and trying to get them into some kind of a retirement fund. But even that, the salaries that they get are going to be very difficult for them to live on if they retire at 65 or 70, because the expectancy today, what is it, 77, 78 for a man? It's even older than that for a woman. And you know, if they got good genes, they may be living to 85 or 90. What happens to those people? And we've done the same thing with our Christian day school teachers. Now, I'm all for the Christian day school, but very few places are you going to find Christian day school teachers getting paid the same kind of salary as the pastoral staff. I haven't got the answers for it. I just throw it out there and say pastors need to address it somehow, some way. Someone says, you're not helping us. You're just telling us the problems. Well, it is what it is. Physical persecution. Paul experienced this in 2 Corinthians 11, 22 through 27. One of our preacher boys over there in India was badly beaten. All of us know about the five missionaries that died, the Alka Indians in 1956. In India, a few years ago, an Australian father and two sons were murdered. They were missionaries there. It happens all the time. We have people in India that are getting hurt, that are getting beat, that are being intimidated. They're going to be physical problems. The mission field can be a very dangerous place. Michelle Demerit is out of Pastor Ball's church. She's a single lady and a godly lady. Got her BA degree and her MA degree here, and she always wanted to go to the mission field, and she came to me after she had finished that, and she said, what should I do? Well, we have a policy, like many mission boards, that we believe that single people likely ought to wait until they're 26 or 27 to go to the mission field because of the fact they're not married. There could be problems there. Maybe the best advice I can give a single young lady is that she ought to pray much that God would give her a husband. On the other hand, after looking at the scriptures and searching my own heart, I cannot really find scriptures that tell me you cannot send a single lady who believes God has called her to the mission field. So we put her out provisionally, in a sense. Gave her a 2-year opportunity. After she had gone through and got the degrees, she had gone out to Ball School there, and she had won people the Lord and was a good witness. And she came back and she said, "Brother Sproul, I want to go to the mission field. What am I going to do now?" My mouth was shut. I couldn't tell her no anymore. And so she applied and she went over there. She's worked well in Singapore. Now she's working with the Reddicks in Indonesia. We don't talk much about it. We can talk about it like this, but we don't put it on the internet. She is having an oversight in a certain city of Americans that are going there and teaching them English. And you know, we're having all kind of opportunities and openings in Indonesia. There is a governor over there of a certain area that a few months ago said to Mike Reddick, "I want you to come, bring a team. There are no foreigners in this area. That means there are no missionaries there. 2 million people." And he said, he had him on the platform. And he said, "Here's 1,000 people." He said, "Half of them have never even heard about Jesus Christ preached to them. They're all Muslims." And when we teach in the universities, they said, "You need a textbook." And they told us, "We can use the Bible." What a blessing. What an opportunity. You're in the heart of the devil's territory. And you've got the sword of the Lord. That's a pretty good weapon that you can use. But physical persecution, it can happen anywhere at most any time. Quickly. Number 8, the burden of carnal worldly Christians. Did I skip one or two? No, I think I'm all right. Oh, hey, I'm getting through quick. I never preached it this fast before. The burden of carnal worldly Christians. "And I, brethren, could not speak unto you as unto spiritual, but as unto carnal, even as unto babes in Christ." 1 Corinthians 10, 3:1. That church at Corinth had problems. And by the way, if you want to preach on some individual sins of Christians and you don't want them pointing the finger at you and saying, "You were preaching right to me," just preach through the book of 1 Corinthians. You'll hit them.
Yeah.
That's all you have to do. Just go through the book of 1 Corinthians. You'll cover it. You'll come to their sin. And you'll likely find a couple of your own in there also. But we have the idea somehow that when people get saved on a foreign field, automatically, ipso facto, they become spiritual overnight. That's nonsense. A good friend of mine went to Korea and was doing well over there as far as winning people to Christ. But he said to me one time, he said, "Brother Sproul, it is not too difficult to get Koreans saved." He said, "But you'll spend a lifetime knocking the nonsense out of their heads." That's because, fellas, everything that they have around them is related to their religion. Their holidays, special occasions, all kind of things in the temple or whatever religion it may be in that country, they have thoroughly imbibed them. They are saturated with, that's what we try to do with Christianity, isn't it? Exactly. And any religion that knows anything about human nature will saturate their social life with all shades of that religion. It really is true. And so they have problems. They may have a split. There can be all kind of problems on that field. But guarantee you, if they come home and say, we really had some problems. We had this and we had that. And somebody in the church is going to say, "Well, they're not very effective over there. I wonder if we should keep supporting them." Meanwhile, a year later, that church splits. A home church.
Yeah.
Fellas, human nature is worldwide. Yes, sir.
We have to remember that there is such a thing today as easy believers.
Oh, yes.
And missionaries, in order to send in good reports, are certainly tempted, at least on occasion, to say, because someone has said they're trusting Christ, that they really are trusting Christ, when the evidence is not there yet, but they are.
They feel under pressure.
We
had a national pastor one time in India, and he had started a children's home. But unbeknownst to me as a director, they'd shut the children's home down. The truth of the matter was, he was getting $600 a month to run the children's home, and now it was going into Hip National Bank. But I was there, and what did he do? He went out in the community and told the parents, if you'll send your children, they'll get good food, and American is coming, they'll get to spend some time with the American and so forth. And the children came in. Later, one of the boys was 12 years of age at the time. I said to Mom, what in the world are these children doing here? She said, oh, you know your dad. And that was the only answer she got, or she gave him. But I was there for 2 or 3 days. I didn't know the language. I was blindsided, didn't know what was going on. As soon as I left, the children went home. Now, you could say, well, he was just doing it for financial reasons, and I think that was a part of it. But on the other hand, I think he felt pressure because the American was coming, and he had to have something to show the American. And I knew that originally they had that children's orphanage going. It really wasn't truly an orphanage. Part of them had no parents. Some of them had one parent. Some of them had two parents, but they were basically starving, and so they'll bring them to the orphanage. By the way, we've just finished a children's home over there in India that is located on the grounds of Shiloh Baptist College. And so we are about finished with that building, and we're going to have two children's homes for a period of time. But Mrs. Cherion has stayed faithful. She has been there for about 35 years running a children's home 365 days a year, 24 hours a day. She gets no vacation. And there was an unfortunate break in the marriage years ago, and she continued on with it. As her husband was dying recently, he came back there and asked her forgiveness, and he was there for a couple of weeks, and then he passed away and went to be with the Lord. But can you imagine that? She's had one helper most of the time. She's had as many as 45 children in that children's home. In the one section for boys, it's a little church, and they just go in there and lay down on mats. It's solid concrete. That's where they eat. And the girls have 2 or 3 rooms in the house, and I think there is only one toilet. It's an outside toilet that they use, but she's my heroine. She is my age. In fact, we're only a few days apart, but I have recognized her and saluted her in India, and we have told her that until the Lord takes her home, IBM, International Baptist Missions, will see that she is supported financially. Her needs are taken care of. What a godly woman. Out of that children's home, get this, fellas, have come 15 pastors. 10 of them are still in our organization today. It does pay to get kids saved and work with them and bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. Oh, I got two more, and time is going by. The care of the churches. Besides those things without, that which cometh on me daily, the care of all the churches. I'm sure their pastor is here, and in the conference this week, they would tell you, one church is enough for me. Regardless of the size, one church is enough for me. By the way, there is no such thing as a small church. Your numbers may be less than someone else, but if you've got 20, 30, 40, 50 people in a church, it's big when it comes to responsibility. When you realize I am one day going to give account to God at the judgment seat of Christ for the members and the way I pastored my church, that is a lot of responsibility. But in the case of Solomon Raju, who is president of our organization in one of the India organizations, there is something like 50, 55 churches in that organization, a Bible college, and a children's home. And he's out constantly going among the churches and preaching and working with them and heading up the Bible college. He has a tremendous load of pressure upon him to carry on the Lord's ministry. Johnny Money was here for 7 years. That's longer than we like to keep a person in this country, but there are various reasons for that. Johnny has gone back now to take over his father's ministry. His father came under our board in 1994, I believe it was. A little short, stocky fella, but knew the Lord, loved the Lord. But a few years ago, he got 2 cancer tumors. We don't know they're cancer. Got 2 brain tumors, I should say. And the tumors were taken out, but whether it was the operation or whatever, the man lay unconscious for over 2 months. He's doing better now. He's home. He was in the hospital for, I think, 3 months. He is now able to write basically as he did before and communicate back and forth by writing, but he cannot speak. It's been a terrible burden on that family. But Johnny's got something like 40 churches that are in the organization. We've got a small Bible college there. There's a small academy there that Johnny is working with. There's a tremendous amount of responsibility. And by the way, it isn't just nationals. You have missionaries that go out that plant more than one church. Here's Brother Messler that's planted several churches over there, and he still has influence, and he still has a certain responsibility to those other churches. It's not just merely one church. Paul said the care of all the churches. By the way, he didn't have the internet to communicate with him. Do you know that when... who's a great missionary to Africa? Left my... Livingston would write a letter out of Africa back to England, and it took 3 years to make the round trip. Mike Messler is here. When we got a computer years ago, I sent him one of my first emails, and within 30 minutes he had sent me a detailed letter back, and I sat there and tears filled my eyes, and I said, what if God wrought? That's what was said with the telegraph, remember, when it was first invented. Here he is, 11,000 plus miles away. I don't even have to pick up the telephone. But we have communicated back and forth within 30 minutes. Today, you know, you got Facebook, you got Twitter, you got Tweet, you got all of that stuff. Hey, I can somehow get on my email address, and that's about all I do. But anyhow... the communication lines today, there are tremendous opportunities here to use them if we use them in the right way. I remember that my kids dragged me from the portable typewriter that we used for years in our home and practically hit me over the head and said, you got to get an electric typewriter, Dad. And so I got to use electric typewriter. And then they began to hound me and say, Dad, you've got to get a cell phone. And I got a cell phone, but no way am I going to get texting. And no way am I going to take pictures of my cell phone. I'm lucky if I pick up the call. And then, you know, with Skype, what is that? I know what it is. I've seen it used. And Johnny Monty says to me, well, Dr. Sproul, if you'd get Skype, we could talk a lot more back together, back and forth together, and we'd see each other. Well, I guess that's good. I haven't brought myself to do it. But I was dragged into the technology world. I remember about 1985, one of our missionaries got a computer, and I said to my wife, what in the world are they doing with a computer? Now they're going to spend all their time wasting it on the computer. Well, I did not have the vision to see what the computer could be used for. In fact, a fellow talked about Logos the other day, and this tightwad thought, you know, maybe I ought to go get that Logos program. I'll bet I could use it because I teach here an ABF class of 35 to 50 adults on Sunday morning. And I'm sure in lesson preparation I could use some of that. But things have changed. But still the burdens are there. And last of all, there's a pitched battle with the enemies of the cross. Paul says, for a great and effectual door is open unto me, and there are many adversaries. 1 Corinthians 16:9. I read you that excerpt from the Philippines in 82. Basically, the only Christians on that island when they went. You and I live in the United States where if we want and we have an urgent need for prayer, we can get on the telephone, we can get on the computer, or you can call a group of pastors together and you can have a time of prayer. Sometimes missionaries are still 400, 500, 600 miles from anybody else. And yet they are going into battle, gentlemen, and they are carrying the battle to the enemy. When they come back, honor them. Treat them with respect. And I want to say couple other things, and I got to be done here at 20 after, according to my son. Do you know what it is like to work for your son? Pastors have asked me, how do you and your son get along? I said, fine. And I said, if we didn't, I wouldn't tell you. That's true. You keep that in house. You keep it in family if there's a problem. Missionaries today, when they are out on deputation or on furlough, oftentimes do not get meetings lined up as tight back-to-back as they like. They may spend all day Sunday in a church, but next week they may not have anything. They may be fortunate to have anything the following week. You may not have a lot of money, but if you looked into it ahead of time and they notified you ahead of time they were going to have some problems, you might consider it. Have you done any traveling by car in the last 10 years? Have you taken your family, let's say, of four people across the United States? My wife and I, when we traveled in evangelism, we lived in Motel 6s, oftentimes $6.99 a night. Believe that. I worked at Bob Jones University in the library and got 30 cents an hour, and I was overpaid. Things have exploded today. I'm out in California, and I see Motel 6s at $79.99. And if you add any more beyond two people, it's $4 or $5 extra. And what about meals? You know, when I was a kid, I went over across the road when I was in high school, and I got one of those big bottles of pop for a dime and a hamburger for 15 cents, a quarter for lunch the first 2 years that I was in high school. That's what I lived on for lunch. Then Mother got smart and said, you're going to the cafeteria, and here's a little more money. But I'm talking about a hamburger. You go to the restaurant. I took a couple to the restaurant yesterday, Benny Moran and his wife. I ate a hamburger at the restaurant and a little bowl of coleslaw. You know how much it was? $8.99. They've got their nerve, haven't they? I'm telling you that if you put a missionary family on the road between churches and they've got to stay in a motel every night, they've got to pay for their gas, and they've got to buy three meals a day for their family, it will be hundreds of dollars that week out of their pocket. And still we have some churches that will never take an offering for them. They have a fixed figure and they'll give them $50 and send them on their way and say, God bless you. Now, those churches are not a large number, I don't think, today. I like what a cooperating board member said years ago. He said, I feel like any time we take a retiring offering, that's money that our church wasn't going to get anyhow. Now, I'm not telling you to take a retiring offering. You likely won't get as much that way as you will if you pass the plate. But he had a church of about 1,000 people, and so he said, we take a retiring offering. Well, he did that for me several different times, and I got several hundred dollars each time he gave an offering. And it was greatly appreciated. But if you fix a figure at a $50 or $100, Pastor, you are set a limit on what the people may want to give. Oh, I've thrown out a dozen and one things. I would take 2 seconds, 2 minutes. If you've got a question or comment, I didn't give you time to raise your hand. But if you've got a question or comment, have I worn you out? I think that's apparent. God bless you, fellas. Let me leave you with one sentence. The mission of the church is missions. Many, many pastors have not learned that yet. The mission of the church is missions. Everything somehow ought to play in. I don't care what program it is that you've got in your church. It ought to play into this overall driving force of the mission of the church is missions. Thank you. God bless you. Come back and see us sometime.